I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called a flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
And it's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E. Pluribus Unum. And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuning live this Thursday, March 7th, 2024 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. And it is a wild and dystopic ride. To be sure, we'll talk about that a little bit. Continuing perhaps from the last couple of days, yesterday in particular, the moral of the story and the theme of yesterday's broadcast really was don't be stupid nor suffer fools or their folly. We live in a society, it's interesting, I talked about this yesterday, we live in a society today where stupidity and ignorance have been glamorized, but we're not supposed to talk about it, and you are probably a racist, bigoted, homophobic, misogynistic, horrible person, if you do. But I would suggest, and I would submit to you that things functioned more smoothly in this society in a bygone generation when stupidity was identified as what it is instead of coddled. So, some of the things that we talked about yesterday, to sort of recap, we talked about Carlo Cipolla's five laws of human stupidity, and that really centered around number five, a stupid person is the most dangerous type of person, and the corollary to Cipolla's five laws is a stupid person is more dangerous than a pillager or robber, etc. And we included Bonhoeffer's sentiments along the same lines, and the idea, as Bonhoeffer put it, the sentiment generally that stupid people are more dangerous than evil people, than the evil people. And so we live in a society now that has glamorized this. And it's ironic, you know, in Bonhoeffer's view, stupid people are more, more dangerous than evil people, because while we can protest against or fight evil people, against stupid people, we are relatively defenseless. Now, what happens if you engineer a society that glamorizes the stupid and the banal, the idiotic, and you coddle it, you institutionalize it and enshrine it as though it is untouchable? And this happens in certain ways. It's not directly this, but there's no denying that we have been moving in a particular direction. I also mentioned the movie Idiocracy as an example, and Brandon Herrera running for Senate, I believe, in Texas, and you know, that as an example. The photo of Brandon Herrera posing, see if I can find that. Where is that? There was an article about that. One of the local news articles. And I mentioned this yesterday. I don't think I mentioned the specific news article, though. So there it is. Brandon Lingle wrote an article that was published in the San Antonio Express News titled "Lingle, the AK Guy, Enters Congressional Race with Big Guns." Political candidates don't need to pose with big guns to impress voters. This truth seems like something we should have learned during recent election cycles, but as the 2024 campaigns rev up, at least one San Antonio area congressional hopeful is showing off his guns. He likely won't be the last. Brandon Herrera, also known as the AK guy, is a firearm entrepreneur and social media personality with more than 2.8 million subscribers on YouTube. Last week, he announced his bid, and the article was published originally August 18 of last year, 2023. Last week, he announced his bid to unseat Congressional District 23 U.S. Rep. Tony Gonzalez, so not Senate, House of Representatives. Tony Gonzalez in the March 5th Republican primary. So, Gonzalez is a veteran as well. 20 years of military service. But he didn't pose with an M249 that I'm aware of, or any firearms. Anyway, the thing that is striking about the photo is, in my humble estimation anyway, is the striking resemblance it bears to Terry Crews' persona from the movie Idiocracy, President Camacho. You probably already know, but if you don't, just do a search in your favorite search engine for President Camacho, Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Camacho, Terry Crews character, and see if there is a resemblance. Well, you'll have to pull up the article or some similar thing. This image used to be on Brandon Herrera's website. I don't think it's featured or published publicly there anymore, but it was at one point on his Brandon Herrera for Congress website, which is BrandonHerreraForCongress.com. Anyway, if you see these two images, they are strikingly similar. And so what does that represent? I don't think it represents the best that we have to offer in society. And so this is evidence, I think, of the glamorizing of this kind of thing. I can't imagine anyone 50 years ago doing something like this, posing in this manner. Suffice it to say, this is not statesmanlike. The image itself sends a message, and I think generally speaking, I don't know. To those whom it appeals, maybe not for the best reasons, and the rest it obviously turns off. I think difficult to argue the message that comes through is deeply polarizing, first of all. In these times, you can say, well, he's just saying that he's unafraid and proud to whatever, but this is not, I think this feeds into a culture of division and ignorance. Johnny Harris did his video. And I talked about that recently, including calling on Noor's, discussion of it. Why the Swiss love their guns more than Americans. And then calling on Noor did his video debunking the viral gun control propaganda, why the Swiss love their guns more than Americans. And the image that is created and that is fed is the false perception that Johnny Harris, that his video feeds, which is that Americans who own firearms are just redneck, unsophisticated, ignorant kinds of folks. And that's just not the case. I've talked about this in the past. For those who understand the complexities of gun ownership today in America, unless you're a criminal who doesn't observe the laws, you're a lawless kind of person, then you understand the complexities and the delicate dance that is required in most cases and the things that you have to think through. It used to be pretty simple. In this society, you could purchase firearms from your Sears catalog, for example. Mail order shotguns and things like that. It was no big deal. And now, obviously, there's this perception that guns are dangerous and everyone who owns one might be a terrorist or an irresponsible redneck who, one way or the other, you're going to you're going to hurt somebody. And none of that is typically accurate. The reason this is all relevant is because there is a social engineering occurring that is producing a certain result, but our perception is being gamed in many ways. And so I think for us to feed into that is destructive. It's very harmful. But to be aware of it, hopefully, is to, you know, going back to the early days of the CIA mind control programs, for example, coming out of, raised out of the ashes of the OSS. I think it was a memo, Dulles to Hoover, if memory serves, that when it comes to the mind control programs, the first key is to understand that somebody's trying to do something. Well, the difficulty with that in today's society, obviously, is the cybernetic aspect of manipulation. And the word cybernetics comes from the ancient Greek, and the concept is basically the steersman or the helmsman. In other words, it's the rudder beneath the surface that you don't see. And so this gets right back to the question, who's in charge, who decides? Deus ex machina, the man in the box. Who is the man in the box? You know, if you go to the Wikipedia entry for cybernetics, you will see the cybernetic loop diagram that makes this point. There's a sensor. There's a reactionary feedback loop, essentially, which looks like maybe something that B.F. Skinner would design, or, you know, something that you would think of with regard to Hegel and the dialectical problem reaction solution kind of thing, moving people along a certain line. So there's something happens, there's some feedback, and then there's an action as a result of that feedback. But this is a process that can be gamed or engineered in a way that people do not perceive. So from the Wikipedia entry, the etymology of the term, the ancient Greek term kubernetikos, or good at steering, appears in Plato's Republic. Isn't that interesting? Plato's Republic, where the metaphor of a steersman is used to signify the governance of people. The French word cybernétique was also used in 1834 by the physicist André-Marie Ampère to denote the sciences of government in his classification system of human knowledge. You know, Google has their library, Kubernetes. According to Norbert Wiener, the word cybernetics was coined by a research group involving himself and Arturo Rosenbluth in the summer of 1947. Has been attested in print, at least, 1948 through Wiener's book Cybernetics or Control and Communication in the Animal and the Machine. Control and Communication in the Animal and Machine. Stick around, we'll be right back.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on a tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life.
Welcome back.
For me, and I'm feeling good.
Yep, that's perfect. So, the concept here, real quick before we go on, this is at the heart of the question, who's in charge, who decides, and who is shaping our perception, and who decides what is acceptable and what is taboo in society. So this concept of cybernetics is interesting, and it parallels the black box concept, Deus Ex Machina. The black box, if you look on Wikipedia, for example, in science, computing, and engineering, a black box is a system which can be viewed in terms of its inputs and its outputs, or transfer characteristics, without any knowledge of its internal workings. Its implementation is opaque or black. The term can be used to refer to many inner workings, such as those of a transistor, an engine, an algorithm, the human brain, or an institution or government. I think saying human brain is misleading. To analyze an open system with a typical black box approach, only the behavior of the stimulus response will be accounted for to infer the unknown. To infer the unknown box. The usual representation of this black box system is a data flow diagram centered in the box. The opposite of a black box is a system where the inner components or logic are available for inspection. And this also dovetails with our own history. We can't see this in America because of our history that, again, back to that concept that's mentioned in the Declaration of Independence, the laws of nature and nature's God, meaning the deists of the day, for example, were not concerned, less concerned, or not at all, really, with what they called, revelation, what the Christian would call the Holy Spirit, and input from one's creator. So because of that, the inner workings are, we're not so concerned about that. We're going to pretend that that doesn't exist, which is most commonly referred to as the opposite of that would be the what is commonly referred to as the white box, sometimes also known as a clear box or glass box. We want to know how this decision-making process between stimulus and response actually works. And so just to finish the thought from the Wikipedia entry, black box, under history, the modern meaning of the term black box seems to have entered the English language around 1945. Again, a curious moment, around the time of the Macy conferences. In electronic circuit theory, the process of network synthesis from transfer functions, which led to electronic circuits being regarded as black boxes, characterized by their response to signals applied to their ports, can be traced to Wilhelm Kauer, who published his ideas in their most developed form in 1941. Although Kauer did not himself use the term, others who followed him certainly did describe the method as black box analysis. Witold Balevich put the concept of black boxes even earlier, attributing the explicit use of two-port networks as black boxes to Franz Breisig in 1921, and argues that two-terminal components were implicitly treated as black boxes before that. So it's a term that, primarily a 20th century term continuing. In cybernetics, a full treatment was given by Ross Ashby in 1956. A black box was described by Norbert Wiener, there he is again, Mr. Cybernetics, in 1961, as an unknown system that was to be identified using the techniques of system identification. He saw the first step in self-organization as being able to copy the output behavior of a black box. Many other engineers, scientists, and epistemologists such as Mario Bungie used and perfected the black box theory in the 1960s. Stick around, we'll be right back.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names. Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Welcome back. All right, so what's the point? This is a fairly recent development on the historical stage. Those who pay attention to or have been paying attention to and noticing the work of old school bad guys know that there are families who you know, there's knowledge that goes back. Guys like Jacques Ellul have written about this, this concept of cybernetics and technique, or, you know, the combination cybernetique in French. There are these ancient techniques to manipulate people en masse. And then this was studied scientifically. And most of that work, you know, the Wilhelm Wundt, William James, Gustave Le Bon, et cetera, et cetera. Most of that research was already pretty well established by the mid-19th century. Certainly by, you know, toward the end of the 19th century, the scientific analysis and refinement of these ancient techniques was mostly completed, and then technology starts to catch up. So you have families that are intent on manipulating people without their knowing it. And Aldous Huxley, obviously, was a member of one of these families. His grandfather, Thomas Huxley, Thomas Henry Huxley, considered Darwin's bulldog. This is a family, you know, extended family of folks, the Darwin family, the Galton family, etc. Some of the folks who, ironically, are doing the things that, you know, they don't advocate the rest of us do, the kind of inbreeding and things that they have engaged in. Anyway, for example, so, you know, in his assessment in Brave New World, for example, Aldous Huxley was not lucky or guessing. He was part of a family that was engaged in the evil practice of trying to manipulate one's fellow man without his fellow man knowing it. So I think we will sort of start all of this with a clip here in a moment. An extended clip. But we should realize that this is going a particular direction. When you look at Thomas Henry Huxley and, you know, Darwin's bulldog, what is he pushing? What idea is he pushing? And the humanist impulse that was continued through Leonard Huxley and, you know, eugenics, Francis Galton, who, you know, these guys are all cousins. Charles Darwin and Francis Galton were cousins. Aldous Huxley's brother, Julian, the leader of UNESCO, borrowing from Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, popularized the term transhumanism, which I think has more to do with humanism than the human. It's the next, you know, it's humanism 2.0, from humanism to transhumanism to posthumanism, i.e. no God. And along the way, again, the concept of cybernetics, the black box, Deus ex machina, is with cybernetics and the black box in particular, the idea is how can we get a consistent behavioral consistent behavior in a system regardless of the black box, essentially. This probably sounds maybe nonsensical, but the idea is, regardless of the black box, how can we get the same behavioral output? And in so doing, really, something is deciding. Who's in charge? Who decides? You're getting the same output. And so if you think about it this way, what's happening is the same output is being produced in society, regardless of, let's say, ideological leaning or religious belief. And so that's, you know, this could explain why, for example, as we look around in America today, most people would say that they don't observe much difference between people who call themselves Christians and everyone else. They seem very similar. So the output product is the same, regardless of the black box, so to speak, who's in charge, who decides on the face of it. But at, you know, upon closer examination, that's obviously not the case. And so this is an interesting phenomenon. I think, you know, how else do you explain what is happening here? It's very interesting. We'll talk more about this. I'll quit making mud pies. We'll play the video that explains some of this, I think, from Academy of Ideas. This was published a couple of years ago, June 28, 2021. In the, you know, the height of the COVID shenanigans, the video is titled, I think we played this once before, but we'll play it this time today. Anyway, do we live in a brave new world? Aldous Huxley's warning to the world. Can we play that, please? Oh, you know what? Maybe I didn't send. Yeah, I don't think I sent it. Sorry. I got to send it to you, don't I? It helps if I do that. Sorry. My apology. You know, it's days like this and people like me. Do we live in a brave new world? Aldous Huxley's warning to the world. So, yep, go ahead, sorry.
In his 1958 book, Brave New World Revisited, Aldous Huxley wrote the following. If the first half of the 20th century was the era of the technical engineers, the second half may well be the era of the social engineers. And the 21st century, I suppose, will be the era of world controllers, the scientific caste system, and Brave New World. 30 years prior to penning these words, Huxley wrote his classic work of fiction, Brave New World. Set in the distant future, this book depicts a scientifically managed dystopian society. In Brave New World, the ruling authorities attain mass compliance not through force, but by supplying the masses with endless streams of distracting entertainment, and manipulating them with drugs and other technological methods. Huxley wrote Brave New World as a warning. Advances in science and technology, he believed, were paving the way for the type of society depicted in this book, and he cautioned that if a Brave New World type of order solidifies, it could be the final or ultimate revolution. The people will have their liberties taken from them, but they will enjoy their servitude and so never question it, let alone rebel. In a 1962 interview at Berkeley University, Huxley explained, "It seems to me that the nature of the ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this, that we are in the process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and will always exist, to get people to love their servitude." According to Huxley, this brave new world totalitarianism was most likely to solidify in the 21st century. And so in this video, we are going to examine whether Huxley's predictions are coming true. Do we live in a brave new world? In Brave New World Revisited, Huxley wrote the following. In 1931, when Brave New World was being written, I was convinced that there was still plenty of time. The completely organized society, the scientific caste system, the abolition of free will by methodical conditioning, the servitude made acceptable by regular doses of chemically induced happiness. These were coming, all right, but not in my time, not even in the time of my grandchildren. 27 years later, I feel a good deal less optimistic than I did when I was writing Brave New World. The prophecies made in 1931 are coming true much sooner than I thought they would. The nightmare of total organization has emerged from the safe, remote future and is now awaiting us, just around the next corner. In Brave New World, advances in psychology made it possible for the ruling authorities to use mind control to condition citizens from an early age to think and behave in ways that were submissive and conformist. Nearly 100 years after Huxley wrote his dystopian novel, has this type of conditioning left the realm of fiction and entered reality? Today, the art of mind control is in the process of becoming a science, Huxley wrote in 1958. The practitioners of this science know what they are doing and why. They are guided in their work by theories and hypotheses solidly established on a massive foundation of experimental evidence. While the idea of mind control may sound like science fiction, in the mid to late 20th century, many prominent philosophers, psychologists, and scientists joined Huxley in sounding the alarm bell that research into the fundamentals of this phenomenon were well underway. In 1953, the distinguished British philosopher Bertrand Russell explained, "It is to be expected that advances in physiology and psychology will give governments much more control over individual mentality than they now have even in totalitarian countries." The renowned 20th century American clinical psychologist Carl Rogers warned that the rapid development of the behavioral sciences, which is a cluster of scientific disciplines, including psychology, psychiatry, sociology, social psychology, anthropology and biology, economic and political science, mathematics and statistics, was in the process of becoming what he called an if-then science. By this he meant that scientists and social engineers were discovering that if carefully constructed conditions are implemented in a society, then there is a high probability that the majority of citizens will respond to these conditions in predictable and hence controllable ways. Or as he wrote in 1954, "I believe that too few people are aware of the extent, the breadth, and the depth of the advances which have been made in recent decades in the behavioral sciences. The increasing power for control which it gives will be held by someone or some group. Such an individual or group will surely choose the purposes or goals to be achieved, and most of us will then be increasingly controlled by means so subtle we will not even be aware of them as controls. It appears that some form of completely controlled society is coming." In a report released in 2021, scientists on a subcommittee of the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies in the UK admitted to using totalitarian mind control tactics to obtain mass compliance. One scientist went as far as to state that he was stunned by the weaponization of behavioral psychology over the last 5 years, while another admitted, "You could call psychology mind control. That's what we do. Clearly, we try and go about it in a positive way, but it has been used nefariously in the past. Psychology has been used for wicked ends." Along with conditioning the thoughts and behaviors of the citizens, in Brave New World, the latest in technology is used by the ruling authorities to provide the population with non-stop distractions of the most fascinating nature. The purpose of this readily available entertainment was twofold. Firstly, to ensure that the citizens did not pay attention to political and social realities. And secondly, to promote docility and stupidity, and thus create a population that cared little for freedom. Is something similar happening today? Whether intentionally imposed on society or not, one thing is certain. Technology and the endless supply of stimulating yet morally degrading entertainment that flows from it is creating a passive, ignorant, and spiritually crippled population uninterested in resisting the implementation of its political chains, just as Huxley warned. As the art and science of manipulation come to be better understood, the dictators of the future will doubtless learn to combine techniques of propaganda with the non-stop distractions which, in the West, are now threatening to drown in a sea of irrelevance the rational information essential to the maintenance of individual liberty. But it is not just an endless supply of distractions which make possible a brave new world. Huxley also predicted that in the future, certain forms of technology would be used to increase the suggestibility and obedience of a population, so that everyone can be depended upon to behave almost as predictably as machines. In Brave New World, the technology used for this purpose was called hypnopedia, or sleep teaching, which Huxley called the greatest moralizing and socializing force of all time. Every night, while asleep, citizens were exposed to propaganda and repeated suggestions from the state. Huxley based his idea of sleep teaching on the science of hypnosis. Scientists have long known that when an individual is placed under hypnosis, alpha waves are activated in the brain, just as they are when in a light sleep. In both cases, suggestibility is dramatically heightened, as Huxley explained. Most of the things that can be done with and to a person in hypnotic trance can be done with and to a person in light sleep. Verbal suggestions can be passed through the cortex to the midbrain, the brainstem, and the autonomic nervous system. If these suggestions are well conceived and frequently repeated, new patterns of feeling can be installed and old ones modified. Post-hypnotic commands can be given. Slogans, formulas, and trigger words deeply ingrained in the memory. While not subjects of sleep teaching, many people in the modern world watch television on a near daily basis for hours on end. Scientists have known for decades that television watching activates alpha waves in the brain, thus placing the individual in a hypnotic-like trance, primed for suggestions and ready to be programmed. The neurosurgeon Adam Lipson explains, "There have been EEG studies that demonstrate that television watching converts the brain from beta wave activity to alpha waves, which are associated with a daydreaming state and a reduced use of critical thinking skills. When in a television-induced hypnotic state, cliches and slogans from the mainstream media, moral values and ideological principles from shows and movies, and suggestions from commercials, politicians, celebrities, and state-sponsored propaganda bypass the critical faculties and seep into the foundations of the mind. Over time, the typical television watcher is transformed into an opinionated robot. His or her evaluations of the world are mindless regurgitations of whatever has been absorbed from the TV. Nearly 70 years ago, the medical doctor Joost Mierlo warned of the hypnotizing dangers of television, dangers which now apply to computers, smartphones, and any other technology which turns the human being into a mesmerized spectator of a screen. No longer does man think in personal values, following his own conscience and ethical evaluations. He thinks more and more in the values brought to him by mass media. Television keeps him in continual awe and passive fixation. Consciously, he may protest against these anonymous voices, but nevertheless, their suggestions ooze into his system." In Brave New World, suggestibility was heightened not just through the use of technology, but also with a superdrug called Soma. The systematic drugging of individuals for the benefit of the state was a main plank in the policy of the world controllers. Soma had no physiological drawbacks. When taken in small doses, it stimulated a sense of bliss, and in larger doses, it generated pleasant hallucinations and a refreshing sleep. It provided what Huxley called a holiday from reality, and most importantly, it made the citizens highly submissive. As well as tranquilizing, hallucinating, and stimulating, the soma of my fable had the power of heightening suggestibility, and so could be used to reinforce the effects of governmental propaganda. Today, not one soma-like superdrug, but a whole concoction of drugs including but not limited to alcohol, marijuana, psychotropics, opioids, and sleeping pills are readily used as a means of escaping reality. The widespread use of drugs in our day has socio-political ramifications. For a drugged-up society, just like a dumbed-down society, is more easily conditioned into servitude. The chemical dependent is not a politically vigilant person who is ready to defend liberty, and as Mierlo wrote, "Any man who escapes from reality through the use of alcohol and drugs is no longer a free agent. He is no longer able to exert any voluntary control over his mind and his actions. Alcoholism and drug addiction prepare the pattern of mental submission so beloved by the totalitarian brainwasher." Drugs can be used to make man a submissive and conforming being. The Society of Brave New World was also organized into a scientific caste system. Prenatal genetic engineering produced children destined to belong to one of five castes. The highest caste, Alpha, was made up of citizens genetically engineered to be intelligent, strong, and beautiful. The lowest caste, the Epsilons, were short, ugly, stupid, and treated as slaves. Each of the castes was forbidden to intermingle. Is a scientific caste system possible today? While the widespread use of prenatal genetic engineering may not be on the near horizon, postnatal genetic engineering and the technological augmentation of the brain and body is in its initial stages. We are at the beginning of a fateful era in which man may merge with machine, and the result could be the formation of a two-tiered scientific caste system. There will be a caste of human beings who welcome the merger with technology in the expectation of transcending biological limitations, and there will be an all-too-human caste composed of people who resist the merger with technology. What restrictions will be placed on those in this latter caste? What surveillance and control will be possible on those who accept technological augmentations? What will be the carrots on a stick to entice people to transition into a transhumanist era? Time will tell. The world of tomorrow will witness a tremendous battle between technology and psychology. It will be a fight of technology versus nature, of systematic conditioning versus creative spontaneity. If Huxley's predictions are coming true, what can be done about it? Perhaps nothing needs to be done. Perhaps the Brave New World totalitarianism which Huxley warned of is not feasible in the long term, not as stable as he thought. Perhaps this form of social order is destined to crumble under its own oppressive weight. But perhaps Huxley was right. With enough advances in science and technology, a Brave New World order can be achieved. And once fully instituted, this will be the final revolution. Human beings will be born and bred in conditions of technocratic servitude that they will not challenge or resist, because it will be a servitude that most of them love and defend. If this should turn out to be the case, Huxley's final words from Brave New World Revisited will prove prescient. Perhaps the forces that now menace freedom are too strong to be resisted for very long. It is still our duty to do whatever we can to resist them.
And on that note, we are headed into the... we're heading into the break. Second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Gonna wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-in lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure! And the ease-off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my ease-off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Easeoff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network.
Because you can handle the truth.